This is IA Forward, your playbook for success as an independent insurance agent. Here to help you knock it out of the ballpark are your hosts, Shane Tatum and Tanya Lead.
Welcome to IA Forward. And Shane, how's your bracket looking?
It's not looking good because I forgot to turn mine in and then games had started. I just forgot to do it. I got busy. I was going from conference to conference and saw people posting on social media and I was just like, I need to do one.
I always have to do my bracket because the first time I ever did one was for the Louisiana Bar Association and all the attorneys got together and Mama's, you have to do this for me. And I am not a college basketball person. I enjoy watching the tournament. I enjoy the excitement of it, but I don't know college basketball the way I know football and baseball. And so I basically picked my bracket by uniforms and how I liked how their colors went together. And we won. Since then, I've learned more about college basketball than I've never done as well.
There's a meme about people like you that pick brackets based on the prettiness of the uniforms and things like that.
In the 7 years that you've known me, I've been pretty much a meme. At least once a month over something.
That's right. That's right.
All that being said, let's get started with insurance. And I'm going to wander a little bit before we get there. This weekend was the New Orleans Air Show. And my husband's brother and his wife flew in from North Carolina because their son, our nephew, was on the F-16 Viper demo team. Now, this is really cool. He's in the Air Force. This is a very elite team, the Viper demo team. It's a jet that goes fast. It's loud. It was really a neat weekend to get to spend the time with the pilot and the crew and just hang out with them. But since we were family, we got to have the VIP treatment. We had the parking pass to come in and park on the flight line and go to the receptions and all of that stuff. We get there early Saturday morning and we have our little VIP passes on. And Daniel was laughing, saying that it was like being back in the radio days again, that he didn't have to stand in line. So anyway, we've got our passes and we walk up to the gate and the gentleman working the gate. And when I say this, I want to make sure that you understand I'm a huge supporter of our U.S. military. I have so much respect for the men and women of our U.S. military. And I am about as pro-America as it gets. So I do not want this to be perceived as me being negative against the men and women in our U.S. military. So we walk up to the first gate and the guy looks at us and this is the main entrance. This is not the VIP entrance. You need to go down a gate. Cool. No problem. We go down a gate and we walk up to this gate and we have our passes. And the guy says, I'm sorry, this is the VIP gate for the Blue Angels. The Viper VIP gate is one gate down. Okay. No problem. So we walk down to the next gate and we walk in and they look at our passes. They look at our IDs. We're on the list. They let us in. So we are now all the way down the flight line past where any airplanes except for the Blue Angels, Fat Albert was parked. And we walk in and there is no one there. And when I tell you there is no one there, there's no one. So we wander over to Fat Albert, which is the Blue Angel C-130, which I've never seen close up. So this was really neat. Took some pictures there and we start walking back toward the air show. Now, at this point, we've walked about half a mile down from the main gate. And we were thinking, okay, we're going to go down there because they've got something VIP-ish going on. No, no. They just sent us two gates down, half a mile down, to walk all the way the half a mile back to the main entrance gate where the VIP tent was set up. And so it was one of those things that had we just been allowed to go into the main gate with everybody else, then we would have already been there. But we were following orders and the men and women of our U.S. military were following orders and saying, this is not where you should be able to come in. You have to come in two gates down. It was one of those things that we have laughed about all weekend because why couldn't we just go in the main gate? Why do we do things just because we've always done them that way?
What you're describing is it's everyday procedural, big company, big whatever things. The question that immediately pops in my head is, are the people designing the process flow and how things should happen, are they even remotely close to the actual event? This is one of my pet peeves. People designing things on paper, people designing things in models, and never actually walking to the process, like never actually doing the job, but designing the job for someone else. And then the workers, this is the problem with frontline, is the frontline people get the frustration. And we can really quickly segue this into so many things insurance, so many things independent agency. That's the thing that drives me crazy, is there's a really strong chance that this, let's have three gates, let's have different VIPs, let's do all these different things for different people, is something designed by someone who really isn't in it. They're really not the customer experience person, or even putting that thought in front of them is foreign. And yet we set things up based on the way it looks best on paper. And what's best on paper isn't always the best flow of how things should happen.
What was really interesting too is they had the same challenge with their tents. You had this VIP tent, you had that VIP tent, you had sponsor VIP tents, but nothing was really marked. And then at the end of the day, when it came time to leave, you had to leave out of the gate from whence you came in. We could not leave out of the main gate. We had to go back down to exit our same VIP gate as we came in. It was an interesting day from a procedural process thing. Really made me think about our agencies and, are we talking to our people? Do we create these procedures because they sound really good in our head, put them in place, but do we ever get feedback on, hey, is this a good idea? Is this not a good idea? Or do we create camels where we ask everybody if it's a good idea and try to apply everyone's ideas, and then we get a camel instead of a horse?
I bet your husband was absolutely losing his mind, not because he was having to go to different gates or do the long stroll, but because every step of the way you were in his ear about how ridiculous the customer experience process was. Because I know the marketer in you.
Okay, really? No, it was the opposite. Because the cute boy being the super logical one, the entrance and exit thing drove him crazy. Now, from an event coordinator standpoint, the stuff with the VIP tents inside, yeah, that was bugging me. And I did just tell them to wait. And I'm like, I'm going to run down to all of these tents and figure this out so not everybody's having to walk, because they're trying to go into different tents. And I'm like, no, that's a sponsor tent. That has logos on it. Don't do that. So yeah, from an inside perspective, that was more my thing. But yeah, the outside perspective was all Daniel.
Okay. Makes sense. You're right, though. Not talking to our people and designing things, it's a bad habit, especially at the management level, leadership level. Not necessarily depending on size of organizations. Leadership, so much less to do with this. I tend to feel like people who are really strong in the leadership and not as strong in management, which ironically, I test out there. That's why I love to manage managers and not manage non-managers. There's just something I've found a weakness of my own. So there's this thing that we do where, yes, the design on paper, the design on our mind can get so out of whack. And if we don't get to frontline, if we don't get to the person that is doing the work, that is doing the process, or we don't put our customer hat on and walk through the customer experience process, then we're really just self-absorbing ourselves. We're really just in a pride vacuum where we think we have the best answer. It's a good way to have a disaster, to not talk to the people that are doing the work. The best thing that we see within our agency network is that the agents that do the work first themselves before they actually go through the process of hiring staff. So starting out as a solopreneur, they actually are the ones that create some of the best workflows, the best customer experience, because they did it themselves. The agents that seem to struggle with it are the ones who have not done it themselves or have not done it themselves for a long period of time. And they may still be stuck in some process that's 10 or 15 years old, but they can't get their head around it because they're not asking their people. I'm at risk of this today. I'm at risk of designing things that don't work because I haven't done that work in a while. I fit into that bucket of that 10 to 15 year mark of, yeah, I've got 25 plus years. And yes, I did the work in those first 15 years a lot, but the last 10 has been different. Our world is different. Leadership is different. The number of people that I employ as a leader is completely different. So it just goes through this process where you have to recognize as an agency owner just where you are. And you may be the one that needs to design it because you're coming out of the dual or triple hat of worker bee, leader, owner, and now you're hiring people. Or you may be the person who already has 5-6 employees and you're not actually frontline anymore. And if you're not frontline, you need to hit the pause button and talk to your people.
Another place I see this being a challenge within the independent channel is when an agent is coming over from the exclusive world and they always did it this way working for Allstate, or they always did it this way working for Farmers, and expecting it to work the same way as an independent agent.
Yeah, that's a big one that we've seen a lot. You have to step back from being too close to it in some cases too. You had this one company, one system, one thing, and a lot of times there is no management system. There might be a CRM from a sales pipeline standpoint, but even at that, when you do things in the carrier system from the agent-facing side, you're doing things in the carrier system, and the carrier system and your system are somewhat one. That totally changes when you are now a choice model, when you are now working with 10, 15, 20 to 25, depending on your geographic area, when you're doing things like personal and commercial, when you're doing admitted, standard, preferred lines versus surplus lines. There's just so many different variables in the independent agency system that to approach it the exact same way, and I'm going to put an asterisk there and come back to this for a minute because I do have an opinion here. To do it the exact same way is going to lead to frustration. Now, that said, back to the asterisk, there is a model that I see working the best for agents leaving the captive system and starting an independent agency, going into the independent agency system.
I know the answer to this one.
Go ahead.
Liberty Mutual.
Yes, there is that answer, but I wasn't going there. That is one answer.
Okay.
But I wasn't going there.
Darn. See, I finally thought I had figured this out.
The answer there is that we tend to see agents, I like to use the phrase swinging the pendulum. We see these agents that come out of the captive system, one trick pony, one market, one system. And then when they go into the independent agent market, it's just kid in the candy store. They go too far. And they become extremely inefficient because they went too far. You don't need 50 companies. You need enough companies and enough of a competitive portfolio. Even in today's crazy market, you need that. You need a good, solid portfolio. You do not need every company you run up against that beats you. That may be a bad idea. You spread yourself so thin and write with so many companies that you have gotten into this diminishing return environment where your efficiency goes out the door. So there's a balancing area in the middle that we like to best practice and talk to our members about. And it is this efficiency with choice. Even our surplus lines environment, we preach about efficiency. We think it's really important that you do business with one premium finance company so that all of your surplus lines billing is in one location. Those are things that are part of the learning curve that we've experienced and seen agents that go too far. And so to your point, they expect it to work the same way, they being the former captive agent, but it's not going to work the exact same way. But there's this middle efficiency ground that agents can get to where they can be choice and competitive and customer focused without losing all the efficiency gains that the captive system brings to the table.
Some of our agents, when they come over from the captive world, think that their agencies are supposed to look the same way. They're supposed to have the same number of CSRs. They're supposed to send out the same marketing pieces because that's what worked for them in their former world. And when talking with new agents, it always scares me when they tell me, oh, I'm going to spend X amount of dollars, or I've taken out a loan to spend X amount of dollars to send these direct mail pieces because this is what worked for me when I was a brand new Allstate agent. I'm like, don't spend that money. Don't take out that money. Just because it worked at X doesn't mean it's going to work now that you are Y. And so that's what I'm thinking about too, not only from a carrier perspective, but from a marketing perspective. We need to make sure that just because you've always done it that way, you know why you're doing it now.
We've seen agents try to just take that thing and move it over. Look, I give a few things as the ambassador, evangelist of the independent agency system that I am. You have to recognize and respect that there are some strengths in other things. There are strengths in other channels. The captive channel strength is the brand that has been built for decades and decades. The amount of money that has been poured in to that channel when it comes to brand, that marketing in that channel is completely different than marketing yourself and pipeline development in the independent agency channel. I talked to a State Farm agent locally one time, and it blew my mind because I did not realize as an independent agency just what that environment looked like. And this particular State Farm agent had told me that 80% of his new business comes from what they called transfers. That would be our agent of record, but they called it transfers. So it's basically someone moving in. And so if you have this State Farm office, the way I understood this, in a growing population area, then you can do quite a bit of business simply by being present in that area geographically, being that agent in that community, and getting transfers from people moving into that location. That blew my mind. I know we have agent of records, but we do not build marketing around agent of records. I understand there's a model for agent of records in commercial and how you go approach that, but I'm talking about building a marketing program around the expectation that you're going to grow a personal lines book specifically through agent of records. I don't love that in the independent agency system because still to this day, 60%+ of the personal lines business in the market is still sitting in the captive and direct channels. We own about 34% of the market. So we have plenty of business to go get from the other channels versus going after our independent agency brethren and our peer group. And we build our marketing around attacking the captive channel and the direct channel. And most of our partners in our agency network do the same. I just think that the marketing development is more community relations. It's just a different thing about your local brand versus sitting underneath this giant brand in the captive system where you're just totally dependent on what that brand is doing and spending.
Within our retail agency, what is something that we did for far too long because we had always done it that way?
Probably this secondary, sometimes it was third communication on how we managed direct billed notice of cancellations. Most of the personal lines, some of the commercial lines in the independent agency world is direct billed. In other words, the insurance company provides a billing option for the consumer. The consumer pays the insurance company directly. We receive a commission from the insurance company. That is direct billed business. So the fallout from the 80s, when everything was, or 90% of everything was what's called agency billing, was that agents were responsible for collecting the bill, canceling the policy, sending out the notices, doing all this stuff. It's a lot of transactional busy work around billing. Most of our management systems that were developed originally in the 80s were literally developed as accounting systems first, because insurance had this unique thing going on. We had a hard time as an industry letting go of notices, telling the customer things that the insurance company was already telling them. We went through iteration after iteration of loss control experts saying, you've got to tell them, or they're going to think you didn't tell them. You've got to send them the notice of cancellation. The company already sent them the notice of cancellation. Why do I have to send them the notice of cancellation? This was me as an adult coming into the workforce as a Gen X and in the mid 90s, all these companies billing the customer, but we're still spending a lot of energy, a lot of money. Notices. Why are we doing that? They've already sent the notice. And then we finally started hearing this loss control thing shift to, if you send a notice to one person, you have to send it to everybody. And if you fail to send it to somebody, you actually create a new E&O exposure. So simply by not sending anybody a notice of cancellation, because the company's already sending the notices, we actually lowered our E&O exposure and improved our loss control, because we got away from doing something that we were doing because we always did it that way. Because in the agency billing world, we had to do it that way. And we just let that come forward with us. That's what happens when there's this huge seismic shift in technology, in expectation, in consumer whatever. We have to be able to take a deep breath, take a step back and look and say, okay, are we doing something that's actually creating more exposure than we should be because we are not letting go of it, because we're still doing it because we've always done it that way? And that's the new risk, because we're moving faster and faster.
We're not advocating change for the sake of change. And sometimes I see that happen as well, because our market is difficult right now. Maybe if I have this shiny object, or if I buy this, or I change the way I do this, then it's going to be better. It's not. The market is not shifting. Everybody is tired. Everybody is grumpy. It's going to take more of a mindset shift than a physical process shift to make what's going on right now in our industry better, which is a bit of a dichotomy from what we started talking about, saying that don't keep doing things simply because you've always done them that way. But I don't want us to go in and make changes simply because we think the changes are going to make it
better. I think
better.
Change just to change is just as bad as grow just to grow. Now, I understand if you're in a startup mode, if you're in your first 3 to 4 years of building your agency from scratch, growing your agency, you're in this grow just to grow mode as a salesperson. But as I hope you shift from just a salesperson to business owner, and you start really paying attention, sooner the better, around your KPIs, your key performance indicators, your ratios there, your financials as a business owner, you start paying attention to those things. I hope that you also think about it this way, that you don't just need to grow to grow. And I have a mentor that's really taught me that, and I understand that better today than I did, say, 8 to 10 years ago, because I spent probably the first 20 years of my career always growing to grow, because I was a salesperson. And if you're a salesperson and you're not growing, you're dying. And all these little statements, phrases come out about an independent agency, because an independent agency, or an insurance agency really in any channel, is by default a sales organization. However, so much stuff has been pushed down over the last 3 to 4 decades to the agency that we are way more than just a sales organization. We are an experience organization. We're an advisory organization. We're a service organization. There's so much that is built into an independent agency system that we no longer can just simply be sales. It's just not the reality. And if you are still strictly sales, then you're probably going to find yourself at some point into a churn, or as fast as you got it coming in the front door. That's not profitable. Your carriers aren't going to love it, because carriers don't need to be operating retention percentage. That's just a fact. If you've got carriers operating within your book of less than 80%, they're not happy about it. I promise you. There's just this business owner shift, and there's this reality that grow to grow or change to change is not the answer.
Basically, figure out what actually works and not what we think is working.
Yes, that's amazing. Let's look at stuff that really works. Let's think about things that is actually moving our needle instead of things that just look cool or feel cool or some salesperson says, this is going to change your life. Let's hold them accountable to that. Hey, I'm guilty of this. Multiple times guilty of this. I figured out that I'm a little bit trusting when it comes to people showing me really cool technology. And I'm like, I remember several years ago, oh, wow, really? This is going to change my life. And it did about half at best of what they said it was going to do. And it didn't change my life. It made my people's lives not so good. And I had to own that. I speak to you as most times from a position of failure, and a position of that experience is not always experience of success. Sometimes that experience, most of the time, actually, before the success happens, there's an experience of failure. Yes, there's this thing out there about, believe it or not, that salespeople selling technology, selling a new thing, a new shiny object, might exaggerate just a little bit about the capabilities of their tool.
A salesperson would do that?
Supposedly, that's what I hear.
Wow.
That's what I hear.
I just can't fathom.
I know.
Yeah. And this is coming from two salespeople.
So that is the irony of this conversation.
I'm going to leave us today with this quote from Bobby Unser. Success is where preparation and opportunity meet.
Attitude to choice. Make a great one.
Bye, y'all.
Ready to get the ball rolling with your independent agency? Learn more at IntegraAgent.com. That's IntegraAgent.com. Thank you for joining us on IA Forward. Make sure you never miss a show by clicking the subscribe button now, or learn more at IAForward.com.